Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, we are back. Jones Laughlin is my next guest. Calls himself the speaker with two last names. And that's true. I've never heard of somebody with this unique last name. Jones Laughlin is an internationally recognized speaker and author. His client list includes many of today's top corporations and associations. His book includes Juggling Elephants, Getting the Blue Ribbon, and Getting to It. He is a change expert, a change management expert, as well as a work balance expert. The man with two last names, Jones Laughlin. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. And yes, I do have two last names. I actually have three last names. My first name is Wiley, which is also a last name. So somewhere my family had a sense of humor.
That's right. All right. Well, let me ask you this. Tell us a little bit about your story. Tell us, do you have a background about your name that you can share with us?
It's interesting. Actually, it does. There's back in the 1800s, we've traced most of the names. I mean, Laughlin, of course, is just a family name from my father and goes back several generations. But the name Jones actually is named for an individual in the early 1800s who was Peg Leg Jones. He actually had a peg leg, and his last name was Jones. And so somewhere down the line, somebody liked that name and dropped it in as someone's middle name. And so my great-grandfather had the same name, and so my parents decided to give me that name. So that's part of the oddity about the name Jones.
Gotcha. You know what? It's kind of neat that you have that background, because as a speaker, that's kind of a neat story to kind of have in your arsenal of stories, right?
Sure. People, I often joke that, I don't care if you remember my name. I hope you remember something that helps you do better in life or find more success at work. It is beneficial. Yeah, he had this weird name. He had a last name for a first name. Jones, that's it. And so, yeah, from a marketing standpoint, it does help.
All right, let's talk about your book. Your most recent book is Getting the Blue Ribbon. In the story, you highlight the need for us to be more intentional. What the heck does that mean?
And I get asked that a lot about this whole idea of being intentional. What we find so often in the work and even in our personal lives, we all want to do better. We want to improve. We want to be a better parent. We want to be more successful at work. We want to improve our relationships. We just don't know how we're going to find the time. We just don't know how to do it. And so we just go about doing the same thing. And we're not intentional. We're not deliberate about changing our attitudes, our actions, our behaviors to get those better results that we really want, but we just haven't been able to accomplish. And so in my book, we give four strategies, simple meaning enough, not simplistic, but simple strategies to help people to begin that process to getting those better results that they want to get.
I love it. One of my favorite segments in the book was about pruning. How does this idea of pruning make us more productive at work or even more successful?
Sure. We all want to add more to our day. And it's amazing to me that our attitudes about, okay, if I can just take on this project, if I can just add this to my day, if I can just work a few more hours, I'll get to where I need to get in my career. And the reality is we have limits. We have limits of physical energy, emotional energy, mental energy. Your last guest was talking certainly about financial energy or financial resources. And so it's imperative that we look at not what do we add, but what do we take away? Where do we need to cut back, the idea of pruning? Where do we need to cut back with our workload, perhaps some of our activities, or certainly even some of our mindsets? In my training programs, one of the things we talk significantly about is the whole idea of multitasking and how we need to prune or cut back on multitasking, because really all we're doing is we're busy, but we're not really being productive on those things that are most important.
You know what, and I don't know about you, but I think multitasking is one of those things that has been hyped
up so much. And it really, when you look at multitasking, it's almost an excuse to do multiple things mediocrely versus doing one thing really well.
Wow. Well said, Bert. You should write that down and tweet it. Somebody needs to tweet that. That was beautiful. But you're exactly right. It is. It's that whole idea of doing a lot of things in a mediocre way. I love, you talked about being hyped. I love in a speaking or training program where I'm working with several people. I say, okay, how many of you in here changed jobs the past 5-7 years? And you'll get several people who will raise their hand. I'll say, how many of you put somewhere on your resume you're a good multitasker? You know, 75% of the people in the room will raise their hand who've applied for a job because we think it's what we're supposed to tout that we're good at. And
right.
It's unfortunate because the research shows that, first of all, we're not multitaskers. As David Allen, author of Getting Things Done, says, we are quick switch taskers. We're switching quickly from one task to another. There's resources lost between switching, and we're not getting them done well.
Right. You know, it's funny because we had him on the show just, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And
okay.
And you're right. You know, the reality is that with, what do you call it, all the technology afforded to us today, we have, I think, become a society of, what do you call it, a very short attention span. And it's going to be interesting as this generation takes control of the country, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because I think, you know, we're going to have to do something, you know, because everybody's into multitasking and tweeting and texting and, you know, and I only got, you know, I can only hold that attention for 3 or 4 minutes and, you know, I don't know what people are going to do.
Right. And we address that in the book when we talk about this story, and I won't ruin it for those who will purchase the book or want to get more information, but the story of John where he realizes that one of the things he has to do is he has to grow or he has to create the environment for the right things to happen, for those better results to happen. And part of creating that environment is beginning to cut back on the number of distractions, whether they be physical, mental distractions, whatever they might be, to begin to really be able to focus in the moment so that you can create that quality result, whether it's a policies, procedures manual you're working on at work or spending quality time with your 9-year-old, you know, to be able to really focus in the moment.
Right. Let me ask you this. One of the things that is in your book, if I remember correctly, is that we have to become better at change. That you know, that the underlying message that I got in your book is that the need for change. What advice do you have for listeners that are struggling with making a change in their life, or maybe they're being forced to go through a change in their life?
Yeah, and two really different you know, situations there. Let's answer the easy one first, and that is if they're wanting to make a change, I think it has to start with visualizing the results. I mean, this is not something new. You know, Covey talked about beginning with the end in mind and those things, but
right.
I think you have to have a clear picture. I worked with Dr. Spencer Johnson for a few years as a trainer at Who Moved My Cheese, and one of the things he was so passionate about, and still is that people have to get a sensible picture of the outcome. And sensible means not like sensible shoes. Sensible means it has to access our senses. In other words, if you're successful in making this change, what are you going to see? What are you going to hear? What are you going to smell? What are you going to be touching? What are you going to be tasting to make it so real that you go, oh, yeah, that's what I want. That's what it looks like, so that you're motivated to go after it. So that's one of the first pieces of that. And then secondly, it's what are the small steps that I can take today to begin moving in that direction, not the large ones, but what are the small steps that I can start taking? Okay, I'm actually sitting down to plan a budget. Okay, that, I need to celebrate that and be excited about that. So I think that's if we're wanting to make a change. If a change is being forced upon us, then I think one of the first things we have to do is to ask ourselves, what do we have the ability to control in this change? And what do we have not have the ability to control? And many times what we have the ability to control is our attitude, our reaction to the change, if we don't have the ability to affect different a different direction with the change. At least we have to look at our emotions and our attitudes. And is that helpful in getting through this change, especially
right.
when it's forced on us?
Yeah, you know what? One of the things that we seem to hate is change.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The reality is we're constantly changing. I mean, if you're not changing, then probably, again, change is being forced upon you because you're being fired or you're not getting the promotion you want or stuff like that. But bottom line, as you say, we have to change. The best thing for us is to make our own changes and grow to reach new goals. But bottom line, whether we do it or somebody's doing it to us, change is the most consistent thing in our lives, right?
Right. It is. And there are three questions that I often offer people who are thinking about change or looking at what might need to change, and just three very simple questions, and it kind of gives a framework for where they are and what might need to change. And the first question is what do you know? What are some facts or figures or statistics that are telling you that change needs to happen? I mean, if you know, I'm sure there's some small business owners listening to the show. What are your numbers telling you? What is revenue telling you? What is your cost per customer telling you? But those are real indicators that change needs to happen. Secondly, what do you think you know? You know, it goes back to Jack Welch. You know, the what's going on in the gut. What do you think you know? What's your wisdom and your experience and your insight telling you that may need to change? And so listening and learning from that. And then the third question, the one that a lot of people don't think about, is what do you not know? I had to laugh a couple years ago. I have several friends who are small business owners, and I would be talking with them, and they know I do some things related to marketing and change and different things. We'd be talking, and I'd say, now, when are you going to start your new marketing plan? Or, you know, in engaging with your customers in a different way? So, well, we're going to wait till the economy improves, and then we're going to start a new marketing plan. I'm like, would you please tell me when that's going to happen? Because I'd like to write this down. They don't
yeah.
know when that's going to happen, and if they wait to change until they have that answer, then that's very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, and guys, I'll just use a couple examples. Who waited to change? You know, Kodak waited to change.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think that Kodak is – I can't remember if they're completely out of business or they've just lost most of their business because they waited to change. And then recently, you know, the Hostess company went out of business. You know, here's
right.
a company that for years, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, you know, who doesn't remember having a Twinkie or, you know, whatever, all the other products that they came out with? The Ho-Ho, yeah, the ding-dongs, come on, man. And all of a sudden, gone. Waited to change. All right, listen, great stuff, great information. I want to give out your website. I mentioned this earlier before I introduced Jones Laughlin, but he is a speaker, and he speaks all over the planet. He just got back from Saudi Arabia, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that. But his latest book, Getting the Blue Ribbon, you can check him out at joneslaughlin.com, JoneslaughlinN.com, Jones Laughlin. And maybe you want to talk to him about a speaking gig, or maybe you want to talk to him about some of the other stuff that he does. Jones Laughlin, thank you so much for stopping by.
An honor, Bert. Thank you, and thank you for what you're doing to get some vital information out there to your listeners.
All righty, sir. Thank you. Guys, that's it. We're off the chart. We're done. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.